You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern, your host. I've got Adam Wright, CEO of Vespeen Energy, and as a guest today. Welcome to the program, Adam.
Hey, Matt, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about what Vespeen Energy is and what your role is over at the company.
Yeah, of course. So Vespeen Energy, you can look at it in two different ways. The first is we're a methane mitigation company. And the second is we're a renewable energy developer. We target landfills. We look at landfills as a major source of methane emissions. And we work with smaller landfills that generally would be outside of the realm of traditional landfill developers. And we help those landfills mitigate their methane emissions by installing self-sustaining microgrids. And a self-sustaining microgrid is essentially a landfill gas to electricity project. So we're combusting the methane in a clean burning turbine, but then we're using that energy rather than distributing it out from the site. We're actually bringing the user of that energy to the site in the form of data processing. And data processing can mean a lot of different things. And there's several types of data processing. One of the most notable is, in fact, Bitcoin mining. And we'll kind of get into the details there. Happy to elaborate a little bit more about the context of landfills and landfill gas and the problem at large.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to be, to Vespeen Energy.
Sure. Well, my background is mechanical engineering. So I have a degree in mechanical engineering from UC Berkeley. And my focus in my career was primarily on ocean engineering. So the majority of my career was actually in submarine design. So I was the founder and CEO of a company called Deep Flight. We did personal submarines for recreation and tourism, but also to expand and sort of shine lights on ocean conservation efforts. By bringing people underwater and having experiences and viewing the ocean kind of as a wilderness. I come from sort of a long line of environmentalists. My grandfather started an ocean conservation nonprofit called the Oceanic Society. So conservation and climate change has always been kind of part of my dinner table conversation. I got exposed to landfill gas and landfill methane and sort of the problem that it presents about 2 years ago. We founded Vespeen on the basis of solving or helping to solve the methane emissions problem.
Well, my understanding is methane gas is much more dangerous to as a greenhouse gas than CO2 is, something on the order of 10 times or more dangerous. Landfills produce a fair amount of it. What percentage of methane worldwide is coming from landfills?
Yeah, there's several different estimates of that. I think the main sort of UN climate change body estimates that landfills represent about 20% of global methane emissions. It's in third place behind oil and gas and agricultural sources such as you hear a lot about cow burps and sort of dairy manure management, but landfill methane is a big problem, and it's not being mitigated to the extent that we think it can be. So, just as a little bit of context, you're totally right. Methane is a horrible greenhouse gas. In the first 20 years of its emission, it's actually 84 times worse than carbon dioxide. It does kind of degrade over time. So if you look at it in a 100-year window, it's actually 25 times worse. But I think any way that you sort of shake a stick at it, methane is a terrible greenhouse gas. So, mitigating and sort of removing methane emissions is of real primary importance to climate change. And you know, if we look at the landfill problem more specifically, and we're US based, so we're focusing on kind of US landfills right now. The US has about 3,000 landfills. You know, there's most of them are going to be sort of rural, quite far away from city centers. So only the largest of those landfills can support a traditional energy project. And when I say traditional energy project, I mean, you know, basically building a power plant and selling that electricity to the grid, or collecting that methane and refining it into pipeline quality gas and then injecting that into the grid. So these two types of projects are very capital intensive, and they require infrastructure. So they require either, you know, transmission infrastructure or pipeline infrastructure in order to get that commodity, whether it be electrons or molecules, get that commodity away from the landfill into the end user. So this means that, you know, of those 3,000 landfills, only about 600 of them are large enough to support those types of projects. All the rest of them are either flaring the gas, so they collect the gas and burn it in a flare because they're required to by the EPA, because they've reached a certain emissions threshold. But landfills that are underneath that emissions threshold are just freely emitting methane into the atmosphere. And our primary target is these smaller landfills that are unregulated by the EPA and are freely emitting methane into the atmosphere.
And how many of the 2,400 remaining, landfills are you targeting? Are you targeting the ones that are also flaring gas?
Yeah, we are. And we are for sure. Flaring gas. So there's two types of landfills, as I mentioned, that we target. There's landfills that are already collecting that gas, but they have no use case for it, so they flare it off. And so flaring is, you know, better for the environment than letting it emit. However, flares can be very inefficient. And I think that, you know, there's been some studies done, a flare, because it's sort of an exposed flame. It can be, you know, it can be influenced by wind or weather. And so generally speaking, a flare only has about 91% combustion efficiency. So there is a lot of methane that's actually escaping. So from an efficiency standpoint, a methane combustion efficiency, it's much better to be combusting that methane inside of a generator where it's in a closed environment. And if you do it that way, you can achieve, you know, 99.5% combustion efficiency. And then, you know, if you're collecting the methane from a, you know, emitting landfill, obviously the, you know, the methane destruction gains are even greater. So, you know, we target both. I think that, you know, for counties or cities or municipalities that are operating flares, you know, these are basically, you know, cash sinks. You know, these are, you know, significant liabilities, financial liabilities for the community. And these communities, you know, don't have a lot of cash on hand. And now, you know, they're sort of forced to upkeep this infrastructure, not only put in the capital to install the infrastructure, but also maintain that infrastructure year over year, just for the purpose of, you know, mitigating this environmental contaminant. We come in and we can help those communities turn that liability into an asset by creating a positive cash flow for them.
So then you put some kind of clean burning turbine there to help burn the methane and generate some power. Now, in terms of the cost factor to these end users, these 2,400 landfills, how much does it cost to put in your technology?
Yeah, so we're a project developer. So from that perspective, we fund all of the capital that goes into our projects. So we don't require any financial contribution from our customers. So not only that, we come in, we install, you know, all of our equipment on our dime, and then on top of that, we pay that municipality a royalty for the gas that we collect.
Now, in terms of what's the downside for the municipality, if any?
There's no downside. I mean, it's sort of a win-win. I mean, you know, the places that we're targeting are, again, smaller rural communities with not a whole lot of income streams. And these communities, because the landfill is relatively small, it's going to be overlooked by traditional developers that are, you know, again, running these larger types of projects. And so these communities have either a financial liability in the sense that they're, you know, forced to flare off this gas and incur this annual fee. And this is going to be done into infinity because landfills are going to be producing gas. As long as that landfill is taking in more trash, that's going to be producing gas, you know, for decades. And even after that landfill closes, if that landfill is not taking in any more trash at all, it's still going to have about 60 years worth of methane that needs to be dealt with. So these are very long-term projects, very long-term liabilities that we can come in and really help communities, deal with. You know, the landfills that are the larger landfills that are targets for traditional developers, these are typically large cities, and these cities already have, you know, plenty of other revenue streams to them. The targets that we're targeting, you know, the landfills that we're targeting are rural and, don't have a whole lot of other revenue streams.
Well, you're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern, your host, and I've got Adam Wright, who is CEO of Vespine Energy, which is engaged in working with landfills to help mitigate their methane problems. Well, we'll be right back just after the break. You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern, and I've got Adam Wright, CEO of Vespine Energy, on the show. And Adam, just before the break, we were talking about how you're working with lots of communities across the country to bring your product or services to reduce their methane emissions. How many communities are you currently working with?
Yeah, so we're a young company. We're recently funded. We have, you know, backing from several leading Silicon Valley venture capitals groups. So we have three projects currently in development and under construction. One in Central California, one in Wisconsin, and one in Georgia. And so that's kind of the beauty of the, you know, using data and data processing to help to mitigate and monetize methane emissions means that we can, because we're off grid, we don't require a grid or a pipeline connection. We can operate basically anywhere on Earth that there is stranded and emitting methane emissions. So this means that we are agnostic of jurisdiction. We don't care kind of how far we are away from a city center or away from a population center. We can provide our service completely in, you know, quote unquote island mode, anywhere on Earth. Obviously we're focusing on the US market right now, but the technology is applicable to other jurisdictions. In addition to those three sites that we have kind of under construction, we have about 30 sites that are in sort of our long-term pipeline that will be coming online over the next year to 18 months.
Okay, well, that's an impressive start. Now, in terms of the average cost to your company per site to build this out and put a clean burning turbine, what's kind of range of cost to put this in?
Sure. I mean, there is a range, and it depends. There are some site specific factors that go into that. I think one of the main things is, you know, different landfills, depending on sort of the, the makeup of that particular community's trash, there's going to be differences in the gas constituents. And so one of the things that we do prior to combusting it in the turbine is that we actually filter out a lot of the contaminants. And this is sort of an ancillary, an ancillary benefit, let's say, of combusting methane in a microturbine, is that, you know, if you're either emitting that gas or you're if you're flaring the gas, you're not doing any of this filtering. A lot of these other contaminants, such as hydrogen sulfide, siloxanes, NOx, there's all these other sort of dirty chemicals that are in this landfill gas that's just getting freely emitted into the atmosphere. And so an ancillary benefit of our technology is that we can mitigate the release of these other gases, which has, you know, significant impacts on local health and, you know, smog and air pollution. So because of the differences in this gas content, it's difficult to say, you know, what the actual cost per site will be. But on average, you know, depending on the size of the landfill, it could be, you know, on the low end, let's say $3 million, on the high end for a large landfill, you know, up to about $10 million. But when we say large landfill, you know, we are targeting smaller landfills. So typically the gas flow, you know, we measure gas flow in, you know, cubic feet per minute. And so we're targeting sites that are, let's say, 1,000 cubic feet per minute and below. But if you imagine that, you know, 1,000 cubic feet per minute, that sounds like a very big number. And in fact, it is a big number. But from a landfill perspective, that's actually considered a small landfill. And there's thousands of these sites across the country that are, you know, either freely emitting their methane or at best, you know, flaring the methane, but in a inefficient manner.
Well, tell us a little bit about the additional chemicals that you're filtering out, these contaminants, and how what you're doing with those contaminants once they are filtered out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the contaminants, so there's two main contaminants, or I guess three main contaminants that we filter out. The first one is hydrogen sulfide. That's what gives you kind of the rotten egg smell. And this is a very kind of hazardous gas. There's basically a solid filter. So there's basically a particulate matter. It's actually created of iron particles that this filtration substrate will actually bind with the hydrogen sulfide into a solid. And so when that hydrogen sulfide binds to this solid filtration substrate, it becomes basically an inert solid and can be disposed of as a non-hazardous material. So it goes from being a kind of a hazardous gas into a non-hazardous solid. So that's on the hydrogen sulfide side. There's other constituents. Another one is called siloxanes, and a siloxane is like a silicon-based chemical. And that gets filtered out by an activated carbon. So, you know, you would have activated carbon or activated charcoal filters for, you know, a typical air filter. And this filtration is enough to bind to the siloxane molecules and, again, render it inert in a solid that can be disposed of as a non-hazardous, commodity.
Well, that all sounds good. I guess the question I have regarding the energy that you're using some of this energy for data processing in terms mm-hmm. of Bitcoin mining. That's where I guess I have a bit of an issue with why use it for Bitcoin mining?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so I think the first thing to understand about Vespeen is that we're not a Bitcoin mining company. We simply use Bitcoin mining as a tool to achieve kind of a longer term goal, and that longer term goal is utilizing landfills as a key step in the energy transition to a green energy future. So the reason that Bitcoin mining is so useful as a methane as a way of kind of economically mitigating methane emissions is primarily for two reasons. The first is that it is it's immediately scalable. So that means that you can set up Bitcoin mining kind of anywhere on Earth without needing a customer. And you can, you know, as long as you have access to OpenSky, you can send that data away from the site via satellite. Right. So if you compare that to, let's say, traditional data centers, Firstly, if you're running a traditional data center, you have to have a much higher bandwidth of internet connection. So you have to run, you know, fiber internet, and typically remote rural landfills aren't going to have fiber internet. And a typical, you know, data center is not going to be able to withstand interruptibility. So this is the other factor that's really important about Bitcoin mining, is that it's fully interruptible. And this is kind of a key feature of our microgrid solution, because the purpose of the microgrid, the self-sustaining microgrid, is not just to, let's say, mine Bitcoin, but it's also to support on-site electrification. And so, you know, landfills have a lot of, electric loads. So there's things like leachate pumps. So leachate is basically the liquid that comes out of the landfill that needs to be either pumped back into the landfill and recirculated, or pumped away from the landfill into a wastewater treatment facility. And these pumps actually consume quite a bit of electricity. So by having a microgrid on site, we now are able to electrify the landfill without needing to consume grid power, and without needing diesel generators. And so typically landfills have a lot of diesel generators to supply, you know, extra power to the site. We're able to leverage the landfill gas, mitigate the methane emissions, and provide that site with clean energy for its on-site use. So we think of our developments as kind of a phased approach, right? So phase one, we're going to get in there as quickly as possible, mitigate those methane emissions in an economic way. Phase two is we support any and all on-site use cases for that energy. So I mentioned leachate, also electric vehicle charging. So there's actually a big push in the landfill community to electrify their fleets. And by having a microgrid set up on site with high power electric production, we can actually co-locate fleet charging with Bitcoin mining acting as a backup. And it's very key to have that interruptible load acting as a backup, because, you know, landfill gas methane needs to be mitigated or combusted 24/7. If you're not charging your vehicles, where does that excess energy go? So we need a place, basically a dumping ground for that excess energy. And then the phase three is, you know, there are some sites that over time, and as population centers change, there are plenty of sites that are going to be targets and good fits for grid connection over time. The reason that you wouldn't start with grid connection is because typically, you know, wholesale energy sales is a very low margin activity, and there's all this extra infrastructure that needs to get put in to attach that site to the grid. Happy to sort of elaborate more on the grid connection, but our goal long term is that all of the sites that we're going to build, that we build out, are going to be attached to the grid, contributing to the overall electrification of the country.
Well, Adam, it's quite an interesting concept. You're listening to A Climate Change. I've got CEO of Vespian Energy on the program, Adam Wright, and we're talking about using the methane coming off of lots of landfills across the country to use it for some good purposes here. We'll be right back after the break. You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Matter, and I've got Adam Wright, the CEO of Vespian Energy, on the program talking about methane mitigation. Adam, just before the break, we were talking about what your company is doing with this energy that's being generated by the clean burning turbines that you are installing at these landfills. I guess I have a question as to why not put a grid connection so that you could feed this energy back to the grid as opposed to Bitcoin mining. I know you said that wholesale energy is not a very high margin business, but isn't that a little bit more environmentally conscious, or than creating Bitcoin which may or may not have value going forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a valid question. And I think that, you know, our goal as a company is that we want all of our sites to ultimately be selling electricity to the grid. So if you said, hey, Adam, you can do what you're doing today and scalably mitigate methane emissions and connect to the grid kind of instantaneously, I would absolutely choose the grid connection option. There's several problems with starting with grid connection. So the purpose of the Bitcoin mining is basically as a bootstrap, and you're able to get a site up and running, mitigate the methane emissions with an instant buyer of that electricity co-located with the site. So the main problem with grid connections are there's several problems, but I'll sort of highlight the main challenges is that if I have a new power plant, let's say a small power plant, what we're dealing with here is anywhere from 1 to 4 megawatts. And that's very, very small in comparison to a typical power plant, which is putting out, you know, 20, 30, 50 megawatts or more, right? And so in order to kind of the utilities are not going to prioritize the work required to interconnect these very small generation assets to the grid at large. And so the challenge there is actually working with all of the local utilities around the country in the jurisdictions where these landfills are located and actually getting the agreement in place to physically interconnect and sell that electricity to the grid. And then furthermore, most of these sites, I think, as I mentioned, are very remote and rural, and a lot of them don't actually have any existing grid connection. So in addition to the time it takes to deal with the local utility, you also have to incur additional expense to build out power lines. And power lines can be anywhere from $1 to $3 million a mile. And so for landfills that are far away from, let's say, substations, it can be very costly to put those in. And so those are two of the main factors, like in addition to the fact that selling wholesale electricity can be very, very low margin, right? So if we start with Bitcoin mining and we over time, we start with Bitcoin mining, we also enable that site to get off grid, and we save them on costs of their electricity and also reduce the overall load on the grid at large. We can and further take them off of diesel generators. We can then over time connect to the grid after, let's say we've used Bitcoin mining, we've managed to amortize the cost of the equipment, the generation equipment. And then once we've amortized the cost, then we can actually accept a lower margin activity for a much longer term. So I think the key thing to understand is that, you know, we are very much our goal is to connect as many of these sites to the grid as possible, because we know that like electricity sales and the need for electricity is only going to be growing. So the fact that we're leveraging Bitcoin mining is simply as kind of a temporary bootstrapping mechanism towards that ultimate goal in the future.
Well, let me ask you in terms of a couple of things. One, for the uninitiated like myself, just kind of assuming that there's some kind of electricity connection, grid connection to every area where there is a landfill, though it might not be a substation, how much is the limitation of what you could feed onto the grid through a kind of regular utility power line versus needing the need for a substation. Also, whether or not some battery or battery technology could be helpful in allowing you to kind of feed energy into the grid, maybe at a slower pace, so that you can feed it into the grid when there are times when power providers need more electricity, like during the daytime. Or the third point is the government and what the federal and state local governments are doing to encourage grid connection in these situations, because it's should be in the interest of all of these governmental entities to lower methane emissions for their respective communities and lower the amount of pollution. Are any of the levels of government cooperating and working with you to help roll out these solutions? And maybe a fourth question related to it is, are there other companies that are doing similar things to mitigate methane coming out of landfills along the lines that your company is doing?
Sure. Well, maybe I'll start with the last question. So we're the only company currently that is trying to address the problem of landfill methane emissions from smaller landfills at scale. There's no other company that is talking to these landfills, interacting with these landfills. I'll give you some examples. You know, when we identify, a small landfill that is emitting methane and we contact them, they've never been contacted before by any commercial developer. So, we're the first company that's actually coming to them with a solution to their problem. And that's simply because of, we're leveraging a technological advance or improvement on the current kind of status quo and applying that to a problem. And so the landfills that we're talking to are sort of, I would say, overjoyed, I guess, to have us knocking on the door and actually providing them with a solution. So from that perspective, our technology and our development, so we've identified in the United States, I mentioned there's 3,000 landfills about, and we kind of, you go down the list and there's about 1,000 landfills out there that are just straight up emitting into the atmosphere. So no gas collection system whatsoever. These landfills, if we select the largest 300 of those landfills, so these are the 300 largest unregulated landfills. If we were to, and we've already sort of having conversations and well on our way to 30 of those 300. So if we were to have projects on all 300 of those landfills, we would reduce U.S. landfill methane emissions by 22%.
Give us a sense of what that means in terms of 22%. What would be the amount of cars and that would need to be taken off the road to or changed to other zero emission type vehicles in order to equal 22% of all U.S. methane production?
Yeah, I know that there's various calculators and things where you can kind of calculate those. We think in terms of CO2e or carbon dioxide equivalent. So 22% of U.S. methane emissions would be approximately 20 million tons of CO2e annually. And there's calculators that'll calculate that into cars, but it's going to be on the order of, let's say tens of millions of cars potentially.
So I guess then the question is, why isn't kind of government getting involved to help scale this out faster? Because I realize this is a private effort that you are engaged in, and that's commendable. But given the scale of the problem and the need to reduce emissions quickly, sure. It doesn't seem like it's going to scale as fast as we need to eliminate methane production in the way that we need to have it limited by, you know, 2030.
Well, the government is very active.
In order to answer that question, Adam, you're going to have to stay tuned, because after the break, we're going to go to break right now, and Adam will come back and answer that important question. We'll be right back. This is Matt Mattern, climate change, talking to Adam Wright, CEO of Vespian Energy. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern. I've got Adam Wright, CEO of Vespian Energy, on the show. Right before the break, Adam was going to answer a question I had just posed to him. Adam, turn it over to you.
Yeah, so I think the question was related to government support for methane reduction in general. And I think that's absolutely true. The government, various government bodies, whether it be the federal government or state governments or even local air districts, everybody that we've interacted with has been overwhelmingly supportive of our solution. Because so, you know, the government only has kind of a stick, let's say, that's so long. So, you know, if regulation is a stick, I think we provide a carrot in the sort of the carrot and stick analogy. It's going to be very difficult, and the EPA has already done a commendable job on, requiring landfills to install gas collection systems and flare their gas for environmental, mitigation purposes. But there's so many landfills in the U.S. and it's virtually impossible to try to, you know, mitigate all of them. You know, they've set certain thresholds that, you know, the new source performance standards, or NSPS, as part of the Clean Air Act. They actually recently upgraded that to say that, you know, newer landfills, or ones that were built after 1994, they've actually lowered or sort of made the threshold more stringent for their emissions by about 20 or about 30%. But even that threshold, still, there's still some, you know, like landfills that are capable of producing anywhere from, let's say, 1 to 3 megawatts of power are actively emitting. And I think one of the questions I wanted to address as well was, you know, I think you're right that most landfills do have some kind of grid connection, in terms of, you know, they have power to power the offices and things of this nature. But those power lines and those connections are sized for very small loads. So typically it might be a 50 amp or 100 amp service. Whereas we're creating, you know, anywhere from 1 to 5 or 1 to 4 megawatts of power, you need to have some significant upgrades done to the site, which is, again, very costly, to have the grid actually be able to accept that amount of power. I think you had mentioned batteries. Like, can you set up a battery system to sort of trickle the power in at a slower rate? I mean, theoretically, you probably could, but batteries are going to be, you know, from a CapEx perspective, significantly more expensive than what we're able to put together. That being said, all of that work to build, you know, to have a grid be able to accept the power built, you know, from our site, we start that work from day one, right? So the day that our site is up and running and generating power and providing economic incentive, we're also working with the local utility to have that site ultimately, you know, connected to grid. And that interconnect agreement can take anywhere from 3 to 5 years in some cases. And so in those 3 to 5 years, we're able to mitigate the methane and provide financial remuneration back to the community. And then when we do get that grid connection, we pick up our data center and we move it to the next site that we're building. So it's very modular and scalable in the sense. So again, it's important to kind of look at Bitcoin, you know, I know Bitcoin mining gets a very bad rap, right? So if I'm setting up a new, let's say I'm opening an old coal power plant for purely the purpose of Bitcoin mining, that is, I would say anybody could agree that that is the wrong message for the climate, right? But I think by leveraging Bitcoin as a tool in this effort to mitigate methane, it can help to, so here's the other thing, the other important thing about that is that for all the more Bitcoin mining that we do on our sites, we are lowering the margins for all Bitcoin miners that are working on dirty power. So the more kind of, because you know, wasted methane is by definition very, very cheap power. So the more kind of wasted methane that we can build out, the lower the margins are going to be for people that are mining with coal, right? And so we're, by us building out more infrastructure, we're actually potentially putting other sort of dirtier miners out of business.
In terms of the diesel generation that you're able to reduce by the fact that you're creating this cleaner power source off of the methane, what kind of reduction are you getting in diesel generation at these landfills that you're going to be doing the work out of?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a very site-specific question. I think that some landfills are going to have, different landfills have different use cases. A lot of landfills use diesel generators to some extent to do things like, I think I mentioned before, leachate evaporation or leachate pumping, but also other types of kind of solid waste management. So there's things like, you know, grinders and chippers and sorting machines. And a lot of times, because that landfill is far, because the electrical service to that landfill is sort of small in terms of its ability to provide power, they're forced to have these other you know, diesel generators that can be, you know, up to, you know, several hundred kilowatts. And so a small landfill of 1 megawatt can support all of these other landfill use cases and basically negate the need to have any type of diesel power generation, which, you know, is sort of it's an ancillary environmental benefit to the main benefit of mitigating the methane emissions. But the thing that enables that is in fact the Bitcoin mining. So without Bitcoin mining being this variable load, that's able to scale up or scale down, because if I turn off my Bitcoin mining machines, nobody's going to care what happens to that data. The only thing that happens is that, you know, I turn it on and I'm gaining, you know, I'm getting revenue. I turn it off, I'm losing that revenue. But
let me ask you, in terms of this problem, that 20% of the U.S.'s methane production is coming from landfills, and given that the amount of damage that's doing to the environment, not that I'm for the government stepping in on every situation to solve the problem. It would be certainly preferable if private industry solved it itself, and your company's efforts are commendable on that front. But why shouldn't the government do more to step in and reduce the amount of methane emitted from these sites? Something along the lines of what your company is doing, whether it's having the clean burning turbines as well as connecting these turbines to the grid more effectively so that we can use that power.
Yeah. Well, so the government typically doesn't come in and sort of develop projects. So the way that the government actually gets involved is with things like the Department of Energy, for instance, has a program called Title 17, which actually got a lot more funding recently from the Inflation Reduction Act. And Title 17 is basically a loan program or a loan guarantee program for developers that are using innovative technology in energy infrastructure to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions. And so we are, you know, in conversation with various levels of government agencies to actually secure, you know, government funding for a broad rollout of our technology.
I think you talked to Jigar Shah. We had him on the program a few months ago, and he's, I guess, in charge of $40 billion.
That's exactly the $40 billions that we're looking at. I mean,
how much of it would you need to roll it out countrywide to really solve this problem?
Sure. In terms of like a dollar spent per like ton of CO2e, our technology is going to be some of the best bang for your buck. So a 300 landfill rollout of systems like collection systems, turbines, and you know, the whole nine yards is going to be anywhere from, let's say, $1.5 to $2 billion for that entire rollout. And that would save 20 million tons of CO2e annually. So if you look
Seems like a good use of our funds, and that's a loan. And from what Jigar Shah told us, that they've got a pretty good collection rate in terms of people paying them back. So that means not only are we going to have an environmental benefit, we're going to get our money back as U.S. taxpayers. So I assume, Adam, you're going to pay us back, right?
Most definitely.
Okay. Well, fascinating topic. Good luck with the work that you're doing, Adam. Great work as CEO of Vespian Energy, helping mitigate the methane problem out of thousands of landfills across the U.S. and hopefully beyond, because the U.S. isn't the only country with landfills. You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern. Please join us next week. Thanks again, Adam, for being on the show.
Thanks, Matt. Nice to be here.